This week on Art in the Air, we take a moment to remember our dear friend, the one and only Billy Foster, to celebrate his remarkable life and musical journey with this encore presentation of his recent interview, along with his wife and music collaborator Renee Miles Foster, and his childhood friend Buster Mooks, sharing anecdotes from his storied career. Our spotlights on Lebesick's summer exhibit, Kindred Spirits, opening July 3rd.
Express yourself through art, and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art, and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art, and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art, and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Lebesick Center for the Arts, curator Whitney Bradshaw. And she's going to talk about what they've got coming up. Kindred Spirits is a whole new exhibit they'll be opening in July, and then maybe a few other things that are going on. Whitney, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Larry and Esther. Great to be here.
Always good to see you.
Yeah, thanks. Same. Likewise.
Well, we talked before that you've been busy traveling, but now you're going to settle back into your work there. So tell us a little about the upcoming exhibit.
Yeah, but before I talk about the exhibit, I just wanted to quickly put a plug in for our annual Art Bash.
Ah, yes.
Is happening, and tickets are still available. It is on June 27th, and the theme this year is Wonderland. So Alice in Wonderland, but it could also be Boogie Wonderland, whatever Wonderland you want it to be. Could be yours. So go on our website and join us. Support Lubesnik and come out to our Art Bash. And then the show, Kindred Spirits, which I'm really excited is the next show, is going to be a lot of fun. It brings together two sculptors who are really celebrated in Chicago. It brings together Margaret Wharton and Betsy Odom. And they have about 40 years between the two of them, but they're really aligned in spirit, which is one of the reasons why I thought this would be a really interesting show. Margaret Wharton passed away in 2014. She is frequently associated with the Chicago Imagists. You know, she employs humor, a lot of puns, and comical figuration in her work. And she's known for using oftentimes chairs that she finds at thrift stores or, you know, estate sales or wherever she found them. And she would disassemble them and then reassemble them as these like kind of whimsical, often anthropomorphic forms.
Really quirky.
Yeah, really quirky. And then, you know, in terms of her puns, for example, there's going to be a piece in the show that's not made out of a chair, but it's a sculpture. It's a sculpture that's called, it's called Pump, and it's made with a gas pump from the gas station and a wooden clog. So a lot of, you know, kind of very everyday materials that are sort of reconstructed in a playful way.
So Whitney, did you get to choose which pieces were going to be in the exhibit?
I did. Yeah, so much fun. And yeah, there's going to be
So
a lot of
when you were
show.
looking at her collection, did you see the teapot, like the cutout teapot, the red one? Was that
Yeah, I did,
it?
but that's not going to be in the show.
I know it's not going to be in it, but I like that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun work, and you know, just like Margaret Wharton, Betsy is really interested. Betsy Odom is really interested in making sculptures about sort of everyday objects. So they both have works that deal with chairs and shoes and also sports equipment like baseballs, bats, other things. They're both from the South, both of the artists, and so that's one of the things that interested me is that they both seem to carry a sensibility around resourcefulness, you know,
Right.
finding and thinking
They
about
both use
objects
humor
and things.
too, humor and irreverence.
A lot of humor and irreverence and like sort of hopping up stereotypes in a way that's really interesting. So, you know, Betsy for their work has really you know, created a term for their work called, why can't I think of it right now? It's called, oh, butchcraft. Yeah. So I guess my vacation time has really taken some of my brain power, but butchcraft, and the work is really interesting because she'll use a lot of, you know, like I said, everyday objects, but that are associated with lesbian culture. So like a Birkenstock or a U-Haul, you know, talking about U-Hauls or you know, codes related to handkerchiefs, which are, you know, coded in the queer community. And they both work with an incredible amount of craftsmanship in their work. And Betsy employs a lot of techniques that are associated with masculinity. So her use of leather tooling, for example, is really incredible. Woodworking. Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting show because they both work with similar objects, but in really different ways. And they have such humor in the ways they employ their materials and they think about the work.
It's really interesting because it's so nuanced. Like with Betsy, their crystal ball is just so fabulous. You take it literally. The nuances are just so incredible.
And actually, Margaret Wharton has a piece that is really in conversation with that piece, which is really cool. I won't tell you more about it, but it's a must-see show for sure. In addition to being really funny and employing lots of interesting materials and having a great conversation between their work, there's also going to be a smash ping pong game that people can come and play that's going to be outside the building. So we're going to start that on opening night, which is July 3rd. Friday night, July 3rd, the show opens from 5 until 8. And you can come play Smash Ping Pong. Betsy will be there. We'll all be there. Unfortunately, Margaret will only be there in spirit, but it's going to be a great show.
We appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Kindred Spirits. You can see it at Lebesing Center opening July 3rd and be running
It runs through October 25th.
a gallery talk on July 11th with Whitney Bradshaw. Thanks so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Yeah, thanks so much, Larry.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you both.
Recently, Art in the Air and both Esther and I lost a very dear friend, the one and only Billy Foster. Composer of our show's theme music, a gifted pianist, composer, educator, and radio host, a genuine Northwest Indiana jazz legend whose lifelong journey in music began at age 7 with the gift of a piano.
As all the heartfelt remembrances are being sent from around the world, who didn't love Billy Foster stands out. Billy, with his darling wife and musical compeer Renee Miles Foster, believed in community, leaving a legacy of love and kindness topped with tangible, long-lasting good works throughout the country.
Though classically trained, he found his passion in jazz, becoming a cornerstone of Gary's vibrant jazz community and dedicating decades to performing, teaching, and inspiring future generation of musicians.
Personally, I treasure and will miss long conversations on all topics, Billy's fast humor and easy distinctive laugh. I adored the Billy Foster Jazz Zone radio program, his IUN Jazz Greats classes, and will cherish the dream come to reality for Billy, Renee, and I, the Foster Golden Jazz Nest Festival.
A proud son of Gary, through his music, his teaching, and enduring spirit as a cancer survivor, Billy showed us that life and music are deeply connected. His impact on Northwest Indiana's cultural landscape will continue to resonate for many years to come.
Thank you, Mr. Foster, for enriching the world with your presence, your music, and always, always bebopping, swinging, and sharing knowledge, opportunity, goodwill, and joy. You are a champion. We are all grateful to have been your friends.
Our thoughts are with his family, friends, students, fellow musicians, and all those lives that were touched by his extraordinary talent and generosity. Rest in peace, Billy Foster, but your music lives on. And now, Art in the Air presents our September 2025 encore interview with Billy and Renee Foster, along with childhood friend Buster Muse.
We are pleased and honored to welcome Billy Foster and Renee Miles Foster to Art on the Air. Billy is a wildly respected pianist, composer, educator, and producer. As an active professional musician, he has performed across the U.S. with others as well as his own groups. He has written and produced recordings with both Billy Foster and Audio and the Billy Foster Trio. He has also written and produced music for several television commercials. Billy and Renee hosted the popular radio show Billy Foster Jazz Zone on WGVE. Renee grew up in a household filled with music, and she absorbed all the music and knowledge surrounding her. With extensive schooling in performance and vocal, she further honed her skills at college clubs and venues singing jazz, pop, and gospel. Renee has been called a beautiful visionary. As an entrepreneur, she founded in 1996 the Northwest Indiana Women's Museum Project, also a catering and decorating company. She is a talented commercial artist and freelance fashion model. As an active arts and community advocate, she has been the recipient of numerous awards. They are joined by longtime friend and artist, Buster Mukes. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome to our very, very dear friends.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Esther.
Thank you so much.
Well, Billy, we always like to start off, and know we've done this before with you in previous interviews, but we're going to revisit it again. Your origin story, more of kind of Esther touched on it, but we want to hear like where you grew up, where you born, and all the way through things, and then eventually how Renee came into your life. And of course, Buster was an early part of your life, but let's go ahead and start with you. Tell us about how you got from where you were to where you are now, everything about Billy Foster.
Okay, I don't know if I can get through. It would take me 70-some years to get through.
And if you don't do it, I think Buster will probably give us the real story.
But I can give you a good overview, I guess. I was born and raised in Gary, Indiana, and I went to Frable High School, Pulaski Middle School and Elementary School and Frable High School, graduated from there here in Gary, and later went to Defiance College in Defiance, Ohio, and then I have a master's from Roosevelt University in Chicago, and did some extra work in New York City at New York University. That's the huge overview. To back up a little bit, though, when I was seven, my godmother offered to give us a piano and, well, actually loaned us the piano as long as I would play it. And so she did that, and I began to take piano lessons, and she never got the piano back.
You did your practicing.
Yeah.
So was the household, Billy, was the household filled with music too?
My parents used to be big music fans, so I don't know if the household was filled with music. They had a lot of records, and they used to take me, actually, when I was a little kid, to music shows at the Regal Theater in Chicago and the Tivoli Theater over there. And so I would see people like Duke Ellington and Miles Davis and Count Basie and Sarah Vaughan. I can remember all those names before I was 10. They wow. would take me. So that's how I got to hear a lot of music. And then when I was really young, they bought me a record player. And they bought me some Kiddie records. And I listened to them for a little bit, but their record collection seemed more interesting to me. So I wound up playing their records with Count Basie and Duke Ellington and all those people I mentioned on them. So I kind of got hooked into jazz at an early age, I guess, by doing that.
So were either of them musicians, mom or dad?
Well, my mother played the piano. She played by ear. She's from a family of 11, and all of them played.
Wow.
And so, she would play the piano.
So did she keep you practicing?
Well, she's instrumental in my practicing, that's for sure. So the deal was this. So I was 7, but I had to be at the piano right after school for an hour each day. And so I did that. And, you know, I came to enjoy it, actually. But my piano was out on the front porch, and I would look over and I could see the kids running up and down the street playing. I would want to be outside at first, but I tell everybody, I've never seen anybody making a dime playing hide and seek. So I guess that was where I was supposed to be. Mukes was in elementary school with me starting from kindergarten, and he used to come up and sit while I practiced. He could tell you some stories about that.
Do you, Buster, do you also play piano?
No. It's just so odd how I met Billy, like the first day of kindergarten. And when I saw him, I looked at him, and it was not a thing of, I want to get to know this guy. It seemed like I knew him. When we left school, I went home with him. I lived 4 blocks away. I was 5. And I went to his house and stayed for dinner. And they accepted me like I was a brother. And I warm family like that. I come from Billy and I are polar opposites. He's an only child. I'm from a family of 11.
Oh.
So it was really a change of pace and a relax to go to Billy's. And so I didn't share him with any of my other friends or brothers or sisters.
But he would watch me practice.
I'd be sitting on the piano bench. And I really understood what he was doing because I come from a very musical family. They didn't have to practice. They could just play. So I was, come on, man. Hurry up. I see them kids out there playing. And I said, I know what key he's got to hit. So when he's getting ready, I'll reach up there and his mother could tell, Mukes, keep your hands off that piano.
But he actually knew me before I started playing the piano.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we knew one another at 5, and I started when I was 7.
Wow.
It has been a...
That was a long, long time ago.
You tell them about the time you guys thought you were going to go out of town. You were going to go where?
Oh.
Riverview?
We were going to Liverpool.
They wanted to go
Where
to
we
Liverpool.
Had heard that name before. So we started down the railroad tracks.
I see where this is heading.
Mukes' dad owned a grocery store. And so we got some hot dogs from the grocery
and
store.
And potatoes.
Yeah, and so we started down. We got hungry. And it was a really windy day. And all of our matches got blown out. And so we wound up eating raw hot dogs.
Delicious.
And they realized they weren't going to be able to get to Liverpool, so they had to turn around.
Whose idea was that?
I don't know.
No, it wasn't mine. Yeah, we're going to walk to England.
Yeah.
They're going to Liverpool.
You know, but since then I don't know where we got that name Liverpool, but there is out that way where we were going a Liverpool Road.
Yes, it is. I know where it is.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering if maybe somebody may have mentioned that too. I don't know.
But you know, Esther.
I think we walked past Liverpool.
Yeah, we went farther.
It is just a remarkable relationship that they've had and they have. And I think it's just a joy to be able to see them interact with one another. And when they sit together and tell their stories and reminisce on things, it's just such a pleasure. You know, I said that God has his hand on Billy, and he's had his hand on him with all the friends, especially you and Larry and all the others that we have been privileged to know and to perform for. And then Billy, kind of tell him about your experience in life with having a job in music and the various fields and careers that you've had.
Yeah, I've been fortunate through the years in that music probably is the main thing that, well, not probably, it is the main thing that I do. Now, I've been able to have a job in music my whole life, so as some people say, I haven't really worked a day in my life. You know, I taught elementary music for 35 years, and then I taught out at Valpo for piano for 34 years, and I've been at IUN for 11 years, and and I've had bands since 1969 and played in bands, and, you know, I have no reason to complain.
And you also had important instructors like Tillman Bugs. And can you tell them about
that? So when I started piano lessons at age 7, my mother found the piano teacher, Dr. Granuel L. Whittemore, who was, in my opinion, the best in town. And I continued to take piano lessons from him from the age of 7. All the way up through college, I would come home and take piano lessons from him, you know, in the summertime while I was going to school. And then I continued to take piano lessons even after I got out of college from him. He was an excellent pianist himself. And
so were you doing mostly classical with him, or did he also include jazz and other?
It was all classical. I played all classical music until I got out of college. And I always wanted to play jazz, but I could never find anybody that would actually teach me what actually was going on. So it was later when I started hanging out in clubs and running into local jazz musicians that I could hang out with them and find out what exactly was happening here.
And would you please tell them about Van, what is his last name?
Van Halen.
Van Halen. What's the name, the classical guy?
Oh, Van, yeah, I had the opportunity to meet Van Cliburn when I was college. He was here playing at a venue that was one of the city's biggest venues at the time, Memorial Auditorium. And Van Cliburn was here in the 60s giving a concert. So somebody I knew.
What was her name?
Mrs. Crump. She knew she knew who was bringing him in. And so
they
invited me to come down and meet Van Cliburn, which was a thrill for me at the time.
And he got a picture with him, too. And Mukes, if you could tell us, you had mentioned a story about you're going to see him at the church play.
Oh, yeah, that's what I wanted to tell him about.
Okay, tell him about that.
As he's talking about classical music, I was right there with Billy when he hit the first note on that piano, and that was just part of our, whatever we had to do, we know we had to go to the piano first, now we're free. So the first recital that I saw him do, and he had been practicing this theme from the apartment, and I have a love for classical music and that song in particular that I can directly attribute to Billy. But when he played that recital, and he played it at a church, so I'm sitting there, sharp, just sharp. I know this dude up, and he started playing, and I stopped. Wait a minute. Who is this? I saw another person. I saw something else come out of Billy. His commitment, it was at a church. He's playing classical music, and people started to shout.
Yeah.
At the end, I had to leave for a minute. I said, he's doing something up. I don't know. I didn't understand that whatsoever.
What was the piece? What was the name of the piece?
Theme from The Apartment.
Yeah, you know, there's one thing about that particular performance I remember very well. I was 14 years old, and that was when I decided that I wanted to be a musician, because people just clapped and clapped and clapped, and that was really fun. And, and I said to myself, this is what I want to do. I have people up until recently talking to me about that very performance. It's really something that...
It was something else.
I
know what that feels like, because that's how I felt when I first heard and saw you play. You just play that piano like it's not even a... I don't know. You take it to something beyond a piano. You're just so smooth and...
As an artist myself, and Billy's artistic talent, it rubbed off on me. I started painting just all of a sudden, and a lot of times, even now, if Billy can do this, I can do this and just take right off and start doing it. I got that from him.
So Billy, you said your mom made you practice for an hour after school. So. Was your mom keeping track of that hour, or was Buster keeping track of that hour? And when did
my mother was keeping track of the hour.
She was the gatekeeper.
From a different reason than Buster was keeping track
of. I just wanted him. We had stuff to do.
They both were keeping track of the hour.
What about the toothpicks?
Hey, wait a minute. Yeah, let me tell them about the time you didn't come home. Go home directly from school. I didn't know that. I was a free, and I had a job when I was 7, and like I said, at 5, I went to his house and stayed as long as I want. And 11 kids, yeah, if one get lost, we'll still make it. And so it was just, he added so much flavor in my life, and we're polar opposites. I'm very extroverted, and he's more introverted, until he starts playing the piano, and then I don't know this guy, and so I'm really interested to see, because when he plays, I know what other people hear, but by my knowing the end track, he's talking.
You know, Billy, I have a question. Since you are classically trained, and you just touched on it a little bit, what drew you to jazz? Now, you listen to jazz on records and things like that, but here you're playing basically classical music, but going to clubs, how did that transition? And maybe you can even speak to this other part of this, is it maybe even a student and they're trained classically, how do they learn the whole thing about jazz, which is much more improvised?
Yeah, so what drew me to it was these performances that my parents were taking me to. And I just love that music. I love classical music also. I don't think because you like one kind of music that you have to hate all the other kinds. You know, I think you can love all kinds of music, you know, but these were the two types of music that I enjoyed playing for myself. And it was those experiences with my parents and the records that they bought and all that, because I can recall when I was a kid, there were some radio shows that had jazz on it. I don't know if you ever remember Jesse Owens, the track star.
Right.
Yeah. He had a jazz radio show in Chicago that I used to listen to. And then there was one by another disc jockey called Marty Fay. And then there was another one by
Daddy O'Daly.
And I used to listen to those, and I used to even tape those so that I would have those records for myself. My parents had a
kind of did that with Marion McPartland. You know, that was who I listened to.
Oh, okay, yeah, I listened to her too.
You met her.
Yeah, Marion McPartland was the very first celebrity interview that I did for my radio show.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, she did a great job. She's a very nice person. Actually, everybody that I interviewed on that show during the 16 years that I had the show were all nice people. You know, I never had a problem interviewing anybody.
Would you mind me interjecting this? I feel it's very important that people listen to the facts that you were classically trained and you had a love for jazz. Now, a lot of people will often dismiss the fact that jazz is such a prominent art form. The genre is exceptionally accepted around the world because it is not, you know, people think that, oh, they're improvising. Well, yes, they're improvising, but these guys who created that art form were geniuses in their time, and then all of their work stand today. So can you, as a educator, Mr. Foster, you can tell the audience what it is that you know about classical music and jazz, and tell them how it is important to be accepted and why it is accepted worldwide.
Well, the funny thing about the two musics is I think people hear when you say it's improvised or just you're playing off the cuff, they don't know that there is a format and a lot of things you have to know. We don't just sit down and just start playing anything. Certain things have to go with certain things in order to make that sound right. You know, so there's an awful lot of knowledge you have to in order to be able to, or some great ears in order to be able to improvise. And I always think that jazz is kind of upside down from most of the other musics, classical music and even pop music, in that this. When you hear a classical piece, they're playing music that's been written, and they're playing it like it's written, almost, because everybody has their own interpretation. But basically, they're playing the notes that are written on a piece of paper, and if they go back and play it again, they're going to play those notes straight through just like they're written, or if they don't, then they've messed up. However, if you go to a jazz performance, it's just the opposite. If you go in and the person is playing it the same way that he played it the day before, nobody wants to hear that. You know, they want to hear that person's creativity right there on the spot, so that it shouldn't sound the same as it sounded before.
And we want to take a quick break. You're listening to Billy Foster, Renee Miles Foster, and of course, along with Billy's longtime friend Buster Mukes on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
So, Billy, what was the Defiance College days like? Did you start your first band then?
My Defiance College days, I played my first professional gigs that I got paid for in the college dance band. The college had a dance band. The college was located in Ohio, and we would play dances all through Ohio and over into Indiana and up in Michigan and that whole area each weekend. And I would make money enough to buy some extra books or some hamburgers or something over the weekend. And I played piano in that band for 2 years. And then my last 2 years in college, I played the saxophone. When I was at Frable, I played saxophone in the marching band also.
But tell them what saxophone.
So I played baritone saxophone, which is...
And that saxophone was bigger than he was at the time.
But at any rate, the band was really a lot of fun. And I can remember the first time I ever played a gig. It was in Toledo, Ohio. And the gig was like, gig is a performance. So I played, and it was for 4 hours. Wow. And I had never played that long, you know, in a row other than practicing. I never played it anywhere that long in a row. Boy, I thought we would never finish. And I was thinking to myself, I don't know if I can make the rest of the year doing this. But it turned out to be fun. And for the 4 years, and I have so many stories from just that one band. But we had a lot of fun. Bruce Evans, who you'll talk to later, I guess, he played bass in the band, which is another story that he'll probably tell, so I won't tell it. But yeah.
Did you have any radio-friendly stories?
Let me think of a radio-friendly story.
I remember, go ahead.
We played several times in Toledo, Ohio. It was about 60 miles from the campus. And I can remember that we had a trombone player in the band that was a big fan of motorcycles. And so we would get off from these gigs, and it would be like about midnight or so. Because back in those days, all the gigs did last for 4 hours. We'd start 9 or 10, and then, by the time you pack up, it'll be midnight or 1. So he decides, have somebody drive his trombone to the gig. He's going to drive his motorcycle, which he did, except that about 12 o'clock, a deep fog descended. You could hardly see the front of the car. So he got back on his motorcycle, and he decided he was going to ride in between two cars. He was going to follow the taillights of one car, and the headlights of another car would be on him. And so, so that took place for several miles until they hit a turn and the motorcycle disappeared.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he actually had a crash. He hurt himself with that.
That's dangerous gig.
Yeah, that's a story I can tell. Other stories, I remember we got all the way to a gig, and the trumpet player realized he had forgotten his trumpet.
And so what did he do?
So did you give him a tambourine then? I mean,
No, he borrowed a guy who sat next to him. They shared this one guy's trumpet. But he wasn't able to play. And then I remember one night we were playing, in a big band. This was a big band. And so, normally the drummer sits up kind of high, higher than the rest of us. And we were playing through this song, and we heard a big crash, and the drummer had fallen off the bandstand with his drums.
Such exciting times, huh?
I could go on and on about
so. So this is all during college days. So where did you go after college? Did you move back to Gary? Did you go to Chicago?
So I moved back to Gary. This is another story too. When I moved back, I really didn't want to teach, even though I had an education degree. I didn't really want to teach. And so this is another Bruce story too. So he went over to School City and he got himself a job. And he called me. I thought maybe I'd join the Navy or something, like one of my roommates had, and get in the Navy band or something. But so he called me up and said, "Listen, they have one more job left. The least you could do is go over there and see what it is." And so I did. And at that point, I decided to accept the teaching job. And when I got home, there was a letter in the mail that said, "Greetings, report to such and such of an army thing in the next few days." So I ran down to School City and signed a contract that day. and that's the story of how I got to be a school teacher.
Meanwhile, I went on to Vietnam. I was drafted during that time.
One of the stories, too, is so between my freshman and sophomore years, I got a job at Inland Steel because I needed money to pay for college. And so I went to the open hearth, which was extremely hot, extremely hot. And we just did, I won't go into that. We just did all sorts of things. But the bottom line is the open hearth had a safety manual. Open hearth is where you see the pictures of this big ladle pouring steel.
Right.
And they had that on the cover of this safety book. So I tore it off, and when I got back to school, I pinned it to my bulletin board so that if any time I thought reading a book was hard, I'd look up at that ladle.
Yeah, that's so smart.
Yeah.
Tell them about the time you were, they didn't tell you that you needed to wear extra clothes.
Yeah, sometimes we would go up on top of the furnaces to help the brick masons reline the furnaces. And they would cool the furnace down to red hot. And the first time I got up there, it was extremely hot. And I was up there dancing around. And the guy asked me, didn't they tell you that you needed to wear two pair of everything to come up here? And nobody had told me that.
And his zipper was burning.
Yeah, even my zipper was burning me.
Oh, my gosh.
Send me back down to get a... I count that as a great experience, you know.
A lesson learned.
Yeah, it was
a motivating experience.
Yeah, it's a great lesson. I'm really glad I did that.
I want to...
Please, at this time, I don't know how much time you have, but remember we talked about Tillman Budge, who was a great educator. You also met Art Hoyle and various other musicians. If you can kind of tell them somewhat of how they behaved, their demeanors, their kindness in helping you. And then we also, what's the trumpeter's name we met? Trombone player in Valpo. Remember he came, Curtis.
Curtis Fuller.
Yeah, can you mention some of these people? Because they really were, tell them about them.
Well, in my job at Valpo, we instituted a jazz festival each year, and we would bring in an artist. And by doing so, we got to play with a lot of the top name artists, world class artists through the years. And some of them I was able to keep contact with. And Curtis Fuller was one who was a trombonist with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. And tons of other people, and he was just a kind gentleman. You know, we had Slide Hampton come over to the house, and
every time I hear Slide Hampton's name, I think, oh gosh, did Billy ever get a nickname? Maybe it should have been Keys Foster or something.
oh, that's funny. You know, we play with Red Rodney and
right.
Just
everybody has little bird. I mean, they all have their nicknames. I was trying to think of a Billy Foster nickname.
I don't have one, so.
Well, we got to find one.
But at any rate, all those guys were great gentlemen and great musicians that we had the opportunity to learn from. And there were a lot of them that right here in Gary, there was an organist named Don Patterson who was a world-class organist that spent 2 or 3 years living here. And Don would come by the house and show me different things. And of course, Henry Johnson and Todd Kuhlman are two guys that, in a way, I mentored. They were in high school when I met them, and Henry wound up playing my band. As a matter of fact, he spent several years, many years, playing with such artists as Ramsey Lewis and Joe Williams, and I'm going to be playing with Henry at the Chicago Jazz Festival this year.
And weren't you featured on two of Henry's albums?
Yeah, I'm on a couple of Henry's albums also.
And they're the opening act with Esmeralda Spalding.
Oh, wow.
And Todd Kuhlman went on to be head of the jazz department at Purchase College, and he played many years with James Moody and some with Horace Silver.
He just recently, Todd Kuhlman, sent a letter to Billy because he wanted to acknowledge his mentors, and Billy was one of them. And the letter is so beautifully written, And I'm so happy that he, and you know,
he has a blog.
When things happen, though, it seems as though the spirit of life, it kind of transcends upon people, because out of all these years, he now has the thought to say, I need to acknowledge Billy and Bruce and the various other people, and as because they were mentors and they meant a lot to me. And in reading that letter, it was so inspirational to me. You got to expound on what you felt, but just to see that people appreciate it. You know, in life, I've learned that you want to be respected. You want to be valued. You want to be appreciated. And when it comes to jobs, you want to be compensated. But all in all, maybe in a nutshell, you start as you overlook life and you have time to really learn to be grateful for the things that you have. And as good stewards, we learn to be stewards, both of us, in what we do and in serving people and helping people. We learned that it is vitally important to learn that God created us, but he also has his hand on us in such a manner that we can celebrate and appreciate, you know, what he made in each individual. Because Billy, I have appreciated and enjoyed the times we've had where we traveled and when we performed together. It was kind of funny when we first started performing together. We would often after we did a gig, we'd both be tired and hungry. And he said, what are we going to eat now? And I said, well, did I sing on that stage and did we work together and do a performance? So now we both have to go get something to eat and we have to work on it. But you know, it's a partnership in life, learning to work with people. And it's kind of hard being with a musician. But see, I'm also an artist and a musician, but I value and appreciate everything to the extent that I understand what it is that the individual needs time for their art. He needs time to practice and all that kind of stuff. You know, you often practice. Can you tell some of the students, perhaps, and people how long it took you to do what you do and be what you are?
Well, we want to come back in just a moment for our guest today on Art in the Air, Billy Foster, Renee's Miles Foster, and, of course, Billy's longtime friend Buster Mukes on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
I want to ask a music question, if that's okay. I would love to. So I love the jazz vespers that you did. So how, I mean, it's just so beautiful. How did that all, how do you write that first note? What goes into the composition? Because yes, you play beautifully, but also you compose music that is just so glorious.
Well, I always tell everybody, which I believe is true, that I had some help from above writing that. It was my dedication to God for keeping me afloat, so to speak, with a, of course, I'm a cancer patient and have been for many years. And I feel that it's a blessing that I've been able to be around this long and produce like that. So I felt that I owed, and I took a good time in writing that. And some of the things that I even wrote the words, you know, some things that aren't natural to me, I feel. And so I feel like I had some help putting that together.
Can you tell them what Jazz Vesper is?
Yeah, Jazz Vespers is a church service that's usually done in the evening using jazz music. I wanted to mention back to some of what Larry was asking earlier. It goes back to the 70s, and when I got out of college, I started hanging around jazz musicians, and I was able to start playing clubs, and I put a band together. It was probably horrible, but we practiced every Saturday all day long, and we would go out and play some local clubs, and that's really how I got started. Later on, this was after I, sort of been in the band business for a while, I was able to get I moved to New York, actually, and met a lot of people there. And I had a steady gig up in Harlem that went from 10 to 4 every night.
Wow.
And so when I got back from that adventure, I taught again for a year, and then I got a gig with a band called the singing group called the Impressions, which is a world-known singing group.
Right.
Curtis Mayfield was the leader of that group for many years, but by the time I got there, it was the two main guys, Sam Gooden and Fred Cash, were still in the group, but they had another lead singer. And that I have many stories I can tell from that association also.
Oh, my gosh. I think we're going to have part two with the rest of these stories. I think we would like to, like, quickly, like, how did you and Renee meet? And because I know that before the marriage, there was a friendship and.
Yeah. I met Renee, hired me for, this was back in the 70s, and she hired me for a gig. Well, but
before that, let me tell you the story. There was a man named Skeeter Hart, and prior to that, it was a man who was a fireman named Tommy Sanders, and he felt that in church, I sang at the St. Monica Church in the choir, he felt I had good pipes, and so he said he would talk to my mother because I needed to sing jazz, and he then convinced my mother to go with us to Mona's Lounge here in Gary. So in Gary, I met Skeeter Hart. And Skeeter Hart said, well, you start coming to my house and I'll teach you how to sing jazz tunes. So I did for a while. And he would have these men sit there like they were the audience. And they were approving of what I was singing and how I was doing. And I didn't know exactly what he was doing while he was playing, but he was modulating. He was doing, changing the chords and all kinds of things to see if I could hear where I was to go and the next notes and that kind of thing. But so after that little time, he then said, well, I can't help you. I can't do anything else for you. You need to meet Billy Foster. I said, oh, Billy Foster. So arranged to meet Billy Foster and come to his home. And he had a little band and stuff. But, you know, he actually fired me from his group because I wasn't used to singing any kind of pop tunes and stuff. And I couldn't remember all the words and stuff and how it went.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, you did. You fired me. And so then through the years, we kept in touch and would have gigs and all. And he was on one of the gigs that I did get at the Blue Room, it was called. And so after we finished the gig, I had to go into the room with the manager to get paid. And so the manager closed the door, and then he started telling me that they didn't make much money and that he couldn't pay me. I said, and then my mind went into war mode, like if I was going to fight with my brothers or something. And I said, listen here, these men out here aren't going to stand for that, and I'll get them to come in here and kick your behind. And you need to pay us this money now. And I said, matter of fact, I'll go out and get one of them so they can tell you that I mean business. So he went ahead and paid all of us. I put my bluff in, you know. But getting back to Billy, I knew him for 30 years. We dated for 10 years. And in November, we'll be married 27 years.
Oh, so beautiful.
Yeah, back in those days, there were about 30 different clubs here in town that you could play music in, play jazz in, actually. And we played most of them.
And they would go from club to club, you know, so on the break, they go down the street to this other club and go up the street to another club. And the scene was so beautiful because every place was nice, a nice club, nice environment. And the people really enjoy themselves. They dress up, and the streets will be full of people just going places.
On Friday and Saturday night.
So, Billy, you have an event coming up. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, the event that I'm having come up is September 20th, which is a Saturday, at Indiana University Northwest. It's the concert. We're using the regular band, which consists of Bruce Evans on bass and Lanny Turner on drums and Renee on vocals and myself. We're adding to it Jacoby Berry on vibes Bill Boris at the guitar and Tim McNamara on saxophone. So we're expanding the band, and we're going to play hopefully some exceptional music and have a great time. And after the concert, which starts at 3, we're having a reception for everyone.
And we also want to mention that the Indiana University Northwest Arts Department, they're underwriting everything, which is wonderful.
Well, anyway, we'd like to thank Billy Foster, Renee Miles Foster, and of course, Buster Mukes came on today on Art in the Air. And again, the general admission tickets are available online at IU Northwest Arts and Entertainment Events if you go to the website. And again, Billy will be at the thing called Billy Foster, along with friends in concert, main stage, IUN, on Saturday, September 20th at 3 p.m. Thank you for so much sharing your arts and music journey with us on Art in the Air.
Yeah, let's plan part 2 so we can get the rest of the story.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having us.
We love you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. We love you both as well.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world.